You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey, you good? You need to stretch it out.
Yo, what up, guys? We are here. Hey, we're starting our episode this week with Matt laughing, as opposed to the aftermath of Matt laughing. But anyway, guys, welcome to hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday. We're here fresh off last week's episode. Matt, who did we have on last week? You remember that far back?
You know, it's taking me back a little bit, but I can never forget the great MVP was here last week, and he was fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying it's our best interview ever. It certainly was entertaining to do while we interviewed him and then listening back. It was great listening to it again. And he's the man, so thanks for that great interview. But what do we got going on this week?
Man, we got Survivor Series Sunday this Sunday, guys. Come and check it out at Jimmy's Seafood. You can see Robbie E., James Ellsworth, and the Queen of Extreme, Francine. Before the show of Survivor Series, we're going to have our own Why It Ended live show, and we might even hang out a little bit during the show itself. So make sure to make it out to Jimmy's Seafood this Sunday. Go to jimmysfamousseafood.com for ticket information.
Yeah, and you can even buy certain kind of tickets where you get to eat with myself, Francine, James Ellsworth, and then, you know, Matt will be there too if you want to eat with him.
Man, the food there is amazing. So I'm looking forward to the food as much as anything. But I love meeting all the people. Like when I was at StarCast, so many people said, recognized my voice, said, "Hey, man, I love your work." And I would always say, "Oh, from where?" You know, because you've heard my voice on a few things. And they're always like, "Why It Ended?" I hear it over and over again. So it's always great to hear from some of these great Why It Ended fans. And we hope if you're in the New York area, Philadelphia, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, anywhere in that mid-Atlantic area, and you're going to watch Survivor Series anyway, why don't you just come and take in a show of Why It Ended?
Yep, and then also Friday, you could catch me in Williamstown, New Jersey for Modern Vintage Wrestling, and Saturday I'm going to be in Owensboro, Kentucky for WWA Wrestling.
So you did some wrestling this past weekend, because it was a weekend, and you also did some announcing, Robbie. You were actually the commentator for a show up north, and it was headlined by Rey Fénix versus Kenny Omega. What was that experience like for you?
I mean, it was great commentating. The show from top to bottom was awesome. The crowd was insane. But I think I know where you're going with this, so just lay it on me.
So
I pulled a Robbie, just lay it on me.
So I think you said during one of the broadcasts that you think Rey Fénix, clearly one of the best wrestlers in the world, and Pentagon, one of the greatest wrestlers in the world. I think you said you think they're cousins.
Well, I did think they're cousins. They are brothers, and I knew that, but cousins came out. Listen, there's a lot of stress. This was a TV taping. We had cues to hit. We had stuff to get in. Cousins, brothers, same thing. You guys get it.
They're called the Lucha Brothers. That's fucking name.
They were in separate matches, so we weren't talking about their tag name.
So
we talk about our guest today.
And let us talk about our guest today, because we have someone fascinating today.
Hey, speaking of brothers, let's talk about our guest today. See what I did there?
Fucking segue like a pro. Yeah. Man, Robert Strauss. Are we changing the name of our podcast? People ask that. Are we doing that, do you think?
Why It Ended with Robert Strauss. Give it a few weeks. Let's see.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He might be Robbie E. again by the weekend. We'll see. So coming up today, speaking of brothers, we have a guy who had a career in his own right that was something that anybody would be proud of, but also the brother of one of the greatest of all time. We have Leaping Lanny, the genius, Lanny Poffo.
Yeah, every time I meet him, he's fun to talk to. He's always got jokes. He's quick-witted. So I think this is going to be a very entertaining episode. And I'm just curious to hear, like, growing up with Randy Savage and some Randy Savage stories, how it's going to be, because I think it's going to be pretty cool to hear about him.
I mean, he's probably going to remember you. You know, you've met him so many times that he's probably going to be like, "Oh, Robbie, how you doing?"
Oh, for sure. I mean, who could forget me?
Coming up next on
Why It Ended.
with Robert Strauss / Robbie E.
He's not just a guy. He's a brand.
And I'm a high school graduate.
You said high school.
I mean, I did. Hey, guys. So by now, you know about one of our main sponsors for the show. And I know you might be a little embarrassed to talk about it, but
it's our friends over at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now, I don't know about you, Robbie, but my hands are important to me. I play guitar and I play music and I type a lot. And so maybe for those of you who maybe want to take care of your hands or protect your hands or save you the trouble, you can go to StopUsingYourHand.com.
And listen, bro, there's no need to be embarrassed. It's all fully private. Any order from Pleasure Products USA comes in plain packaging with nothing indicating the contents, guys.
And you know what? Give the hand a rest. You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com. And if you go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo, enter the coupon code FISTBUMP, and you can get a free stroker.
And remember, guys, no worries about getting found out because your credit card statement will not reflect that an adult product was purchased. So you're in the clear.
Now, StopUsingYourHand.com's premier product is called the 3V Starlet Stroker. And it's got a ton of features that you might not expect, you know, such as, you know, a real voice coming at you, or maybe a little movement in an unusual way. Where can you go? You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo. Use the coupon code FISTBUMP for your free stroker. StopUsingYourHand.com.
How did you first fall in love with pro wrestling? Did you like wrestling before your brother did? Like, who did one of you get each other into it?
Well, my father was a wrestler. Did you know that?
I did know that. Yes.
Yes. So it was kind of thrust upon us. And, oh my God, I'm getting messages, but I get popular during these shows, and then as soon as you're done, it ends. My father was a wrestler and wanted to be a baseball player. We all wanted to be baseball players. As soon as they took a number two pencil and struck our name from the list, we became wrestlers.
And Lanny, so in growing up in the Poffo family, you know, of course, your father it wasn't just a great wrestler. He ended up being a promoter and all of that. Of course, you said baseball was big. Of course, we know Randy had success in the baseball world. Growing up, though, looking at your dad, being the younger brother, did you want to be a wrestler? Was that what you aspired to be?
Well, I didn't want to be a welfare recipient. I just wanted to make money, save money, and live off the interest. And now I've made money, saved money, and living off the interest. So although, you know, I didn't get, when I dreamed of being a wrestler, I didn't want to be a jabroni. So I got a couple of moments, and that was good enough for me.
So what age did you actually start wrestling at?
18.
18, and how did you get trained?
Well, my father trained me, but he also said that you should learn from not just him, but from everybody, and never stop learning, because the moment you stop learning, you stop deserving to be in the ring. And every match should be a learning experience, so don't confine your learning to one teacher. So he just started us, but then he recommended that we watch everybody and see what we liked, and if you steal from one guy, that's stealing. If you steal from 100 wrestlers, that's called research. one is plagiarism, the other is research. Okay.
Yeah, that's what Robbie, you do that all the time, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't have enough moves for that.
Yeah.
Hey, so Lanny, of course, you know, I actually teach music for a living, and my son is a musician. He plays music, and sometimes I realize that he can't really learn from me as well as he can learn from others. Like, I literally have other people teach him sometimes. Who are the people that your dad kind of trusted to help break you in the ring if you weren't in the ring with him?
Well, I'll tell you, a guy that really stepped out of his way to help us, help me personally, was Paul Christie. He was probably, you've never heard of him, although he did achieve some fame in the Independence and the like Mobile, Alabama, Chicago, and a few places. And I still call him up because he had not just wrestling lessons, but life lessons for me. And I was very, very appreciative of, you know, no man stands taller than when he stoops to help a child. And he had a lot of patience with me, and I was a slow learner. So it helped me a lot. And then Thunderbolt Patterson, have you heard of him?
Oh, absolutely. No. Absolutely.
Well, he would ride with me in the car and say, "Leapin' Lenny, you got to take your time because you got something special. Ooh, I can't say what I want to say." You know, and he was always very nice to me and with my interviews and, you know, criticize some of my matches without hurting my feelings. But don't forget, I am the brother of the Macho Man Randy Savage. So if I were sensitive, I would have been found hanging in my room many, many years ago. But see, the thing is, you get tough. And the thing I miss about my brother most is his,
here's the deal. You really suck.
And believe it or not, that's how he showed his love. You know, because he did it with such personality, he could get away with it. You see what I mean? And I miss it the most because that was his way of showing how much he cared, you know, and he had that great personality. So it didn't seem mean. Okay. He was actually trying to help me.
How long was he wrestling before you started wrestling?
I started before he did.
Oh, wow.
Because he got signed by the St. Louis Cardinals and played baseball for 4 years.
So when he started, you actually had to help him out and teach him when he started?
That never happened.
No. I'm assuming he was just a natural. He was a natural in the ring.
There's only one thing I helped him at, and that is when he first started, he was a natural wrestler. And then but his body was like too skinny for wrestling. Okay? And then so he worked on his physique. And then when he finally pretty much conquered that, he came to me and said he's having trouble with his interviews, and that's the missing piece of the puzzle. So I said, well, you know, I felt pretty important that he came to me. And I said, well, I think you're doing okay. He says, no, I'm having anxiety attacks. I get nervous. I don't feel like I'm not in control. And I said, well, let's steal somebody. What kind of wrestler do you admire? Like, you're a Savage. Your name is Savage. Your hair is Savage. Your wrestling is Savage. Name a Savage type of wrestler that you think is a great interview. And he says, Curtis Iaquea and Pampero Ferpo. I said, well, remember when we were in Hawaii in 1967 and 68? And you could see Pampero Ferpo, who's Armenian, but he's from Argentina. So he's got this strange accent, okay? Anyone, you have you ever heard of him?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I have.
You have and you haven't, okay. He's still alive. He's about 88 years old, and we're still friends. I got him into, when Randy became in the Hall of Fame in San Jose in 2015, through his daughter, I got him special VIP treatment so we could see Bruno Sammartino and all his friends, you know. But he used to go, number one station in Hawaii. Whoa, yeah. I said, Randy, let's see you read that line.
You are watching the number one station in Hawaii. Ooh, yeah.
And I went, he's got it. He says, what do you mean I got it? I said, that's it. It felt like money. He says, well, do you think I should call up Ferpo and ask him if I could use it? I said, no. The Beatles used it first. And before that, I'm sure Louis Armstrong did, oh, yeah. But see, Louis Armstrong did, oh, yeah.
Right.
And the Beatles did it their way. And and you can't imitate Ferpo because he's Armenian and Buenos Aires, Argentina. Oh, yeah. But Randy went, oh, yeah. So everybody says, oh, yeah, but only one person can be the Macho Man. Well, actually, two people, counting Jay Lethal.
That's very true. Hey, I got to say, it doesn't do you a service to say you do a great impression of your brother. Every time you talk like your brother, it really jolts me because it's so accurate and it's like hearing his voice. But with Lanny Poffo, you know, growing up in not just the shadow of your dad, who is an iconic figure in the area, but also Randy, who is off like a rocket. Is that why you developed the style you did? Because watching you in the early WWF days of your career, I saw the first, you know, top rope springboards I ever saw. I saw the first moonsaults I ever saw from Lanny Poffo. Now, was that kind of your way of establishing your own niche away from your brother?
Well, I didn't say to myself, I think I'll establish my own niche instead of my brother. You know, what I was trying to do is, here's what happened. I just came back from Japan and I was there and they said, is it true that you invented the moonsault? And I said, yes, I invented the moonsault right after I saw Tiger Mask do it. So I said, you know, I was like, let's not kid ourselves. I'm not an innovator. I'm not even a perfectionist. I'm just a thief. Okay. So I'm a somewhat coordinated individual. And I always tried to, Terry Funk told me, Lanny, the most important thing in wrestling is you got to be peculiar. And as a baby face, you know, I permed my hair. I looked ridiculous. I can't stand to look at those videos. And then I tried everything. And now I'm a mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper. It's a joke. I'm Clark Kent. You know what I mean? It's like Clark Kent hairdo, Clark, everything's Clark. So, you know, in other words, I'm not making an attempt now to look unusual. I'm making an attempt to blend in, okay? But when I go to different wrestling, you know, functions, the Hall of Fame ring, and I let the fans wear it, and I take a picture with them because I feel that I am the last man standing. And, you know, I hate to say this, but I have been, my father would roll in his grave if he knew how much money I refused to sell that Hall of Fame ring to somebody that had the money. And the price just keeps going up. And I'm saying to myself, I can't sell it. It doesn't belong to me. I get to wear it, you know. And, you know, just wonder if I needed a meal, I'd sell it. But, I mean, you know, it's to be no reason to. So, yeah, you know, when I became, I was in the WWF for 5 years as a babyface leaping Lanny. And then it was getting stale. Okay, so, you know, because you can't keep doing it, you know, suffering hero, by God, I'm going to make a poem that you suck and then I get beat, you know what I mean? It's just, but then they made me a heel. They thought I couldn't be a heel. They said I couldn't do it, but I had to reinvent my character and I worked on it and I, man, the walk and everything. And I tried and tried and I listened to the people, but I want to give credit to one guy. Because when I found out I was going to be the genius, I said, boy, that's close to Bobby Heenan's gimmick, you know. And so I walked up to Bobby and I said, look, they want to make me the genius. Do you feel that that would be encroachment on your, you know, gimmick? And he says, no, good for you. I'm glad you're getting a break. As a matter of fact, I'm going to help you all I can. And I'll tell you, I get emotional thinking about it because he could have stopped me right there. You know what I'm saying? He could have stopped me. And he didn't stop me. He helped me. And, you know, now that I'm, you know, going to be 64 years old next month, it means something to me that, you know, and Bobby Heenan's gone, of course, you know what I mean? But a lot of people think he was the greatest manager that ever lived. I'll tell you what. He was more than just that. He's one of the best people. Sorry, but I get emotional, you know.
Oh, that's all right.
Absolutely. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet Bobby the Brain Heenan with my son a few years ago, a couple years ago, towards the end of his life when he couldn't talk. He could sign autographs and he could shake hands. And my son went up to shake his hand. And of course, Bobby looked the way he did. And, you know, my son still at 12 years old went to shake his hand and Bobby pulled his hand away.
Yeah, they, you know what? You know, some guys are great interviews, but when the red lights stopped, Bobby Heenan was Bobby Heenan, whether the red light was on or you understand me? He didn't stop being Bobby the Brain just because the interview was over. You know, he was like 24/7 in character, and that was him. And he was like, he used to tease me sometimes in the locker room for any reason, but I always laughed and I never tried to do anything combative with him because I know he would dice me up like a, you know, like a Vegematic. You know what I mean? I've seen him in action. I've seen the man in action. You cannot beat him in the battle of wits. You know, even when he was starting to lose his voice and his face back in the, you know, when the cancer started taking, I did a doll with Jack Specific. They did.
Yes. Dolls.
Okay. And then we were in New York for a big doll show. I call them dolls. Some people think it's action figures. For me, it was a doll.
Yeah, the hardcore action figure fans are going to be mad that you're calling them dolls.
Okay, hardcore action figures, they're dolls. You know? So anyway, you could barely hear him because they were cutting away at his larynx and all God knows what. And he still made me laugh. But the voice that I could barely hear, he grabs a doll of Outlaw Ron Bass, looks at it, and he says,
"Well, these ought to fly off the shelves."
You know, like when you think about it, that's not a gimmick. That's a cliche. Because in every Western movie that you've ever seen, am I right?
Right.
There's a guy with a black hat. Of course, he's the bad guy. Now, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I could have thought of that while, you know, pensively picking my nose one day. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I got it. We'll put him in a black hat and he'll be a bad guy. You know, come on. It's like the genius had some creativity, you know, and I was like always trying to expand. But when you're a black hat guy, you know what I mean? He's a bad guy.
Well, the genius wasn't the only thing that had creativity. You know, the Lanny Poffo coming in as Lanny Poffo to the WWF, following shortly thereafter, you know, after your brother came in. But you coming in with this poetry thing, the frisbees, you know, the custom made insults for the opponent. How did you come up with the idea for the poet laureate, as Gorilla Monsoon would call it, of the WWF?
Okay, it was, first of all, it helps if somebody likes you, okay? Gorilla Monsoon always liked me, okay? And not everybody did. Some people, okay? Not everybody's going to like you because there's cliques forming and everything and some people. So what it is, I was a guest on TNT, Tuesday Night Titans. Do you remember what that is? Do you know what it is?
I don't.
Yeah, it was a talk show on USA Network of WWE stars.
Lanny, everything you've asked if we know, Matt knows what it is, and I don't know what any of this stuff is.
and actually, Robbie's the wrestler, so you know, he's got no excuse.
Well, I'll tell you what. Don't take it the wrong way, but the man with the answers is also a smoker, so I give you the credit for being smarter, okay? Okay, look, let's not get, you know, you talk about you love your boy, you know what I mean? And I know, but if you want to be there for him, I want you to, how many cigarettes do you smoke a day?
About a pack a day, too many.
Well, if you go on geniuslannypoffo.com, I wrote a book called Limericks from the Heart and Lungs, okay? And they're all humorous limericks, like a cigarette smoker named Faye smoked more than a pack every day. I asked her how come. She replied, "'Cause I'm dumb." I guess that's a good answer, eh? So anyway, my point
got
is...
Got that, Matt?
I do. I feel
okay. Bad. Anyway, there's 335 limericks. That was one of them. And then they go on to, like, when Sheila earned her PhD with her boyfriend of equal degree, dissertations got tough, so they smoked off the cuff. How stupid can smart people be? And let's see, what else did I got? A real estate mogul named Dave lets cigarettes make him a slave. Location, and smoke inhalation has led to his premature grave. So these are three of them, and there's 335 of them, so I just picked three random ones. So
Matt's got to read those other 300.
Bobby Heenan dipped tobacco. He put them between the cheek and gum. And that's what caused him. And Tony Gwynn, you know, there's different. You're really playing with fire to put that stuff, smokeless tobacco. and the other stuff is like problematic, but I encourage you to count how many cigarettes you're smoking every day and try to smoke one less per day consciously. In other words, if you smoke a pack a day, that's 20, right? So tomorrow, smoke 19, and then 18, and then by the time 20 days is up, you'll have shot yourself in the head with a gun, you know. Anyway, you know, but listen, it's just, it's hard to quit because it's got something in it that's got a hook on you. So anyway, let's not bother you about that anymore.
Hey,
can I just ask you something real quick before you continue on with the question? Can I ask you one thing that I wanted to ask you a few minutes ago that we skipped over? When we were talking about the moonsault and how you saw it in Japan, were you actually the first person to do it in the United States?
No, actually, Tiger Mask did it to the Dynamite Kid in Madison Square Garden. And I was at Cinte Sports Center in Lexington, Kentucky, and some wrestling fan says, "Hey, man, I got... There's this guy, Tiger Mask, you should see him." And I said, he had a videotape. Do you want me to? I said, "Yeah, give me it." That was back in the days when you stick a videotape into the machine, right?
Of course.
Not like you punks today that, you know, it comes invisibly over your iPhone.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what we had to do. We had to actually stick it in and press play. So he did it in Madison Square Garden. But when he did it, WWF was just Eastern, okay? And when I did it, it went worldwide. So I got credit for it, and I didn't even do it as well as Tiger Mask. Trust me, I didn't do anything as well as Tiger Mask. This guy was, I mean, right now there's been four Tiger Masks, because when I was in Japan, I saw one of them, but it was the fourth Tiger Mask. But it's still the same Jushin Thunder Liger, you know what I mean? In other words, some of these masked men take their gimmick and pass it on, I
sure,
guess.
Sure.
But anyway, my point is, I go on TNT and I'm thinking, well, I'm a babyface without a gimmick. You know, if I don't do something, I'm not going to be invited back, because there's nothing more boring than a guy that sells and comes back. You know what I mean? So, oh gosh, I'm sorry. Very good. Thank you so much. I'm just happy to be here and I hope I can do better. You know, that's like the basic babyface interview of the boring, you know? So I go, if I'm going to be on this show, so I get my, I had an idea for a gimmick where I wore theatrical armor, like I was King Arthur.
Right.
So I walked in that, and Vince McMahon says, "What are you dressed as?" And I said, "Do you want me to take it off?" He says, "My father would roll in his grave if I made you take that off." So I said, "Well, I've got a poem for the occasion." And I went, if I can remember it, let's see. I'm getting older, you know, and I'm going to be 64 next month. Did I mention that? Okay, it goes, "Look back through the annals of history and the Wrestling Hall of Fame, men from all nations with courage to spare who struggled to carve out a name. Now compare these high standards of valor with those chivalrous knights of yore, with bravery staunch as their armor, their glory, both legend and lore. My medieval connection with wrestling relives that magnificent past. Though mindless skeptics may snicker and scoff, the winner is he who laughs last. Alive with the love of wrestling, I appear on TNT between Vince and Awful Alfred, the hottest show on TV. I'm not your average wrestler, but I wouldn't want to be. I never scream or kiss my arms. I'm happy just being me. I call myself Leaping Lanny. I validate what I say to every single wrestling fan who's watching USA. Yes, I believe in miracles as God has blessed this great land. I believe the referee will soon be raising my hand." So when we went to commercial black, Vince says, "Lanny, that was great. From now on, you do a poem before every match." So I acted nonchalant, right? But inside, the 12-year-old boy inside of me went, "Yes, I have a gimmick. That's my gimmick." So then I get to...
Were you a poem writer your whole life? Like, did you do that when you were younger?
Okay, I have two people to thank for this, okay? My fifth grade teacher, who said to me, "Lanny, that paper you wrote..." It was my third day of class, and we had written two papers, How I Spent My Summer Vacation and Tell Me a Little Bit About Yourself. And she says, Mr. Poffo, I want to see you at 3:20. And she was young and beautiful, and we're still friends, by the way. She's, you know, and she's going to be a great grandmother, you know, but that's, I really appreciated her. Because I was never noticed for anything except sports. And now she's noticing something else. So I felt that ego went, oh, praise. She says, Lanny, the paper you wrote, How I Spent My Summer Vacation and Tell Me a Little Bit About Yourself, they were just wonderful. And she says, I think you can be a writer. And I went, well, Casey and the Sunshine Band weren't out yet, but I went, baby, you ain't seen nothing yet. Here's something you're never going to forget. so then I'm wrestling in, I'm wrestling for Nick Gulas. I hate to admit that. Have you heard of Nick Gulas, the promoter of Nashville, Tennessee?
Robbie, have you heard of Nick Gulas?
What do you think? Of course not.
And so are you saying you didn't get paid a lot of money, Lanny? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's not what you make, it's what you save, okay? And even at $400 was, I would save $200 at least, right. Okay? And that doesn't sound like much, but it's over 10 grand a year, and then it took me 7 years to get to the first $100,000 mark. You know, and I'm not saying this because I'm bragging. I'm saying this because Ric Flair is a woo, earn it and burn it, baby. You see what I mean? And I like to... I read a book called The Richest Man in Babylon, and that became not just a book, but my Bible, okay? And you don't have to, if you want to read the book, you don't have to. It's on Amazon, but you don't have to send any money. Just go on YouTube, and a great actor will read it to you, okay? And it's like, and you know, it'll catch on or it doesn't, but it's just my way to live. So anyway, my point is, I was in Nashville. A strange-looking bald-headed man came up to me. You got to watch yourself with, you know, strange-looking men. And he says, listen, I've got my niece and my nephew here or whatever. He had an entourage of people. And he says, I'm a big fan of yours. I've seen you on TV, and I want to take you out to eat. And I said, cha-ching, free meal. Ha-ha. You know? And
I would say the same things.
Okay, so, you know, he was as nice as he could be. But then during the conversation at the restaurant, I said, oh, my God, did you write The Giving Tree? Are you that Shel Silverstein?
Oh, wow, Shel Silverstein. Wow.
And I said, you know, what a lucky break that he would come into my life, you know what I mean, and inspire me, right? And then after my divorce, I was getting a divorce and I was wrestling in Dominican Republic, and I had already been given my, what do you call, good luck in your future endeavors. You know what that means? The WWF, WWE.
Absolutely.
We wish you luck in your future endeavors. And I said, and then I was going through the divorce and that. So that's like a 1-2 punch, you know? And, you know, I don't know. I can't say if there's a higher power or what, but it seemed right when I was feeling sorry for myself, here I go to the Dominican Republic and I see people who have nothing and they're happy because, you know, they have sonrisa though, sonrisa, they smile because they think they're millionaires because they don't live in Haiti and they have nothing, but they have joy and they're happier than I was because here I was, poor me about my divorce, poor me about no more WWF, right? So, and then I fly back to Miami and I see him, but he's aged. And I think it's Shel Silverstein, but I said, my God, he couldn't have fell apart that far. And then I said, excuse me, are you Shel Silverstein? He says, yes. And I said, well, many years ago, my hair is different now, but I used to be Leaping Lanny. Now I'm the genius, blah, 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 blah. Lanny, sit down, blah, 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 blah. So I missed my flight home. We were talking. And then I said something really dumb, and he got mad at me. And I said, I've got an idea for a book about limericks for helping children stop smoking or not smoke, because I heard that if you succumb to tobacco, you're five things that might happen to you according to statistics: bad grades, dropping out of school, teenage pregnancy, teenage suicide, and drugs and alcohol. See what I mean? All of that gets, the statistics go higher if you smoke in school, because as soon as, if you can't learn to say no, you know, you succumb to peer pressure and they don't love you, okay? They just take advantage of you and then throw you away. So then I said something really dumb. I said, do you think that would be good for a book? And he goes, and I said, why is this crazy old man staring at me? He says, we live in a country where we have freedom of speech. Speak! He says, I thought you were a smart guy. I guess I'll have to reclassify you. You mean to tell me you feel something in your heart and you're asking me permission to write a book just because my name is Shell effing Silverstein? You know, anyway, he went on and on, but it was a great moment for me because, but he died in 99 and I didn't get published till 2004. So I couldn't say hi here, but you know, every girl that ever rejected me was on this shoulder, and everybody that said, this is boring, you're not going to get published, or you suck, you know what I mean? Right. But he would be on this shoulder, go speak, and everybody get knocked off this shoulder, and I would just go on Microsoft Word like a hunchback and just, you know, throw limericks at it, and then finally got a publisher, and then it's sold very well, and it's still geniuslannypapo.com. It's still available, and it's also on Kindle and all that stuff. So,
well, I'm definitely I definitely need to pick it up myself, as you said, you know, and it's a great story because Shel Silverstein is one of the great, you know, I guess, I don't know if you'd call him a poet, but he's a writer of, you know, The Giving Tree and Where the Sidewalk Ends, and a lot of
I know Where the Sidewalk
Ends. Yeah, he's a, you know, I mean, you've got kids, Robbie, you got to read him those books, but for you, that was a huge influence and really informed the bravery you had in breaking out that that poet laureate character right in front of Vince McMahon's face. At what point did you feel like, you said earlier, you know, they turned you heel and, you know, they said it was getting stale. At what point did you feel like it was getting stale? Or did you feel like maybe the Leaping Lanny poet character could have been pushed a little harder?
Well, yes and yes. I think it could have been pushed harder. But, you know, the thing is, the money was good, okay? And do you remember what happened in the Battle Royal in the NBC?
With Andre the Giant.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you're speaking of a Saturday Night's Main Event, 1987. You were you really bled a lot after being eliminated out of the Battle Royal, right?
Yes, I bled a lot. And that was like a signature moment for me. Like I said, Gorilla Monsoon was always nice to me. So I was on a dark match. You know what the dark match means?
Robbie has wrestled as many dark matches as you've probably wrestled matches, Lanny.
Well, I didn't, when I was a boy dreaming of glory, I didn't say, boy, I want to be in a dark match. That way, if the lighting man says there's something wrong with the lights, he can fix them before the stars come out, you know, and the sound man and all this. Oh, yeah, just use me as a prop. You know what I mean? Don't worry about me. I don't have any feelings, you know. So, but, you know, the price is right. I'll be there tonight. I'm a whore. So, really, what are you going to do? I got a wife and a daughter, and I got to support them. And that's the best way I could. I was very well paid whore. If you're going to be a whore, be a well paid one, right?
Hey, very true.
Yeah. So then Jackie Kennedy Onassis only did two tricks in her life, and she was like the best paid whore ever. Now, don't tell me that she goes from the handsome John F. Kennedy
right,
to a horrible looking Aristotle Onassis, the fifth richest man in the world at the time. You know, like, probably had to shut the lights out to do that. So anyway, and he wanted a trophy wife. So, you know, there's whatever. It's expensive, but it's a deal. So anyway, my point is, Gorilla Monsoon said, Lanny, I need to talk to you. And I said, he says, I just got done with a production meeting with Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersaw. Do you know who that is?
Robbie?
from NBC.
Oh, look at Robbie.
Yes, you win.
That was I just put two and two together. I figured it out. I really didn't know.
Yeah, he was from NBC. He was like the number one guy he was the president of NBC Sports among his many, many accomplishments. And he was a totally capable man, you know, who never, both Vince McMahon and him never buckled under pressure. And they're under quite a bit of it all the time.
And a matter of fact, Vince McMahon has learned a lot of production values and learned a lot for the future WWF from working with Ebersol and even the promos and everything like that on the Saturday Night's Main Event that he partnered with Ebersol on, right?
That's right. You know, Vince makes his own decisions, but he likes to get different ideas from people that are already successful, you know, which is just a sign of a great man. You know what I mean? Because if there's a better way, he wants to hear about it. Okay. And he's never satisfied, just like my brother, never satisfied with a costume, never satisfied with an interview, never satisfied with a match. But anyway, Gorilla Monsoon comes up to me and says, don't make a monkey out of me. I just went to bat for you. I said, I would never make a monkey out of a gorilla. And he says, oh, very funny, but have you ever done a blade job? Does anybody know what that is?
Yeah, Robbie doesn't do them, right?
No. I'm scared.
Well, actually, nobody does them anymore because there's HIV virus. But before then, nobody knew that, okay? And I still thought it was like very, it's a terrible thing to do to yourself, you know? And he says, so I lied to him. He says, how many blade jobs have you done? So I said, about 300. Actually, the correct answer was 30. And,
you really had done 30 at that time?
Yeah.
It was 30. So common back then just to bleed because it's unheard of now.
Well, they don't do it now because that's HIV. You know, you're better off having unprotected sex with an HIV partner. You still only have 33% chance of getting it. But if you swap blood with somebody or, you know, that's 100%.
But either way, back then, like 30, that was average? Like, was that all guys? Was everyone much?
Well, it wasn't average for Abdullah the Butcher, but it was average for me. You know, and I only did it when I was asked. So I didn't volunteer it, and I don't like it. But, you know, what are you going to do, right? So they can always get another wrestler. You know, but I'm lucky to have a job always. So anyway, they say Andre's got he's got a big match coming up and they need a sacrificial lamb to feed to him so he can be a big heel. They already got him with Bobby Heenan, who's the best manager. But he's been a babyface all these years as the greatest babyface in the world. You know, even in the 70s, of course, in the 80s, he wasn't great anymore. He was like on the downhill slalom, if you know what I mean. You know, when you knocked him down, he had to be near the ropes so he could climb back using the ropes to help him. Those are, you know, that's like if I would wrestle now, I'm past my peak, you know, past my sell-by date. So anyway, I go out there, I cut the supratrochlear vein. Now, that is also the frontal vein. It goes like here and it branches off into the scalp. And nobody knew when I did it. But I knew that they had a thing called post-production editing. So I actually did it before I went to Andre and I said, okay, boss, boom, and threw me over the top rope. And I was already bleeding when I hit the floor. That's what nobody could figure out. But on my own podcast, I admitted it. So I might as well, you're not getting a scoop, but you're getting an almost scoop because I'm in the Genius Cast, you know, and it's, so I scooped it there. Okay. And people said, wow, you know, he finally admitted, you know, how he got it. Because they thought it was a hard way or, you know what I mean, that really hit me, you know. No, it's like Breaking Bad, hiding in plain sight, right? So, and I went, boom. So, man, I knew I had enough. Oh, so Andre, okay, boss, and put me over the top rope. And then, you know, here's what made me angry. Are you ready for this? Now, I'm known as a very happy guy driving the happy bus and always happy and all this. But then, I mean, before the thing, Dick Ebersol came up to me and says, Lanny, we've never had blood on NBC. Please bleed for us. Please bleed well for us. Please, we need you to bleed well. And Vince McMahon says, hello, pal. You know, you're going to bleed for us? I said, yes, sir. I'll do my best. He says, that's what I want to hear. You know, everybody was all, they were big on the please. But where's the effing thank you? You see what I mean? So here I get back to the locker room. I got a towel over my head. I'm pressing on it to try to stop the bleeding, and I can't. Because it's like I cut the supratrochlear vein, and I sliced it hard. I even used my left hand to do it, you know what I mean, to make sure it was, I had to get enough, okay? And then, so now I'm a dead man in the locker room trying to stop the bleeding. And the only guys that are helping me is Rick Martel, Macho Man Randy Savage, and Rene Goulet, and myself. So I said, is that all I have in this world is three friends and one of them is my brother? So, I mean, everybody else is busy and they're walking past me and everything. But I'm over here going, trying to stop the bleeding. And then, where's my effing thank you, guys? You know what I mean? I didn't get no thank you letter. I didn't get no thank you card. And when they made the card for WrestleMania 3, I wasn't on the card. You understand? It's like, and it's like the Jewish comedian goes, that's the thanks I get. You know, in other words, okay, fine. Guess what? That's why I saved my money. That's why my passive income is greater than my monthly expenses. So I no longer need to cut myself in the middle of the ring like a whore. Okay.
Did you ever question anything, like ask them what they thought of it or why they didn't thank you or anything like that?
No, I knew better than that. You know what I mean? If they wanted to thank me, they would have. And, you know, that's just, it's just another indication of where they thought I was. However, a couple years later, I'm the genius on NBC and I'm wrestling Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all's well that ends well. And, you know, you can't live on the top deck, but you certainly can, you know, at least for one brief shining moment, I drank from the silver chalice of success.
Where, you know, you were turned into the genius, you know, and you turned heel. Was there any talk ever at any point of pairing you up with your brother and making that big quote unquote reveal to the fans at large that you guys were actually brothers and working maybe a brother versus brother or anything like that?
There were only two times where I had anything to do with Randy in the professional WWE. And can you guess them?
When you arrived and when you left?
No. When Randy became the Macho King, I was in the ring and I did a poem for him. Okay, behold this humble entourage. Their heads are, you remember it? You smiled.
No, it just takes me back when you do your poetry. It's just like, you know, it's like my childhood coming to life again. It's crazy.
Okay. I'll just briefly. Behold this humble entourage. Their heads are bowed in reverence at the very slightest whisper of one name, exalting in his splendor, which is altogether fitting, of the people and the lands from whence he came. False monarchies are commonplace as kingdoms rise and fall, but I, the genius full of glory and renown, say the Macho Man is everything that everybody everywhere would ever, ever want to wear a crown. I say this king deserves a queen beside him on the throne. And Sherry is the fairest in the land. We witnessed the dethroning of one Jim the Hacksaw Duggan, whose crown and robe are in a state of ravage. I now remove my mortarboard and place it near my heart, and thus proclaim you Macho King Randy Savage. So, ooh, yeah.
And what was the other time?
In 2015, when I inducted him into the WWE Hall of Fame. So that's when, you know, I referred to him as my brother and everything. And so, you know, we peeked behind the curtain of my family. But I'll tell you what, you know what I'm proud of that speech? It was only 8 minutes long. And look at everybody else's, 25, 35, 100, an hour. You know, George Burns said, if you want to make a great speech, have a great beginning and a great ending, and then push them as close together as you can.
Sure.
And so your career in WWF as the genius. You know, it took off to the point where you were, as you said, facing Hulk Hogan on Saturday night's main event. Eventually, you transitioned to more, you know, managing type situations. Is that a reflection of where you were at the time as far as wanting not to wrestle as much, or is that where the WWF saw you as more of a mouthpiece in the later years of your career there?
I have no idea. I just did what I was told to the best of my ability. I didn't want to be a manager. It's amazing that I got choked up to think that Bobby Heenan could have squished me, and he didn't. And instead, he always gave me advice. And do you think he didn't know stuff? Oh my God, he knew a lot. You know, but I mean, the brain and the genius, that's pretty close. So, but he was so confident in himself. And by then he was mostly into sports journalism, you know, that microphone end of it. And nobody did it better than Bobby. Come on. So he wasn't at all threatened by me.
Throughout the years, what was like your relationship with Vince McMahon like? Did you guys always get along?
Well, I knew he was the boss, so I just tried to do everything I could to the best of my ability. And I never told him, hey, I didn't got to get a thank you for cutting my head off there. And, you know, I never told him that. I'm telling you that. Okay? But I will tell you something that hurt my feelings. Besides that, it's even worse. That when Randy died, so many people reached out to me with condolences. And not just that, for my father, for my mother, and for my brother. You know, I'm somewhat easy to get a hold of, okay? Especially for WWE. I mean, they send me money 4 times a year. They know where I live. And when I moved, I gave them my address and my new phone number. You see what I mean? So, I mean, I'm not hiding, okay? So I just thought that they would send me a little sympathy card or flowers for my mother or something. N-O-T-H-I-N-G, nothing. So and I think it to myself, they've got all these PR people that they have on retainer, public relations people, but you don't need PR people. All you need is some common effing decency. Give me a fucking, you know, sympathy card. You know what I mean? They did public things, but where was the private things? And also, they asked me if I would do the DVD for my brother. I said, yeah, and I even talked my mom into appearing in it. But, you know, you've got people like Gene Okerlund, who said nice things about Randy. And you've got other people like Diamond Dallas Page that had nothing but nice things to say about Randy. And Hall and Nash, they said nice things about Randy. Bret Hart said nice things about Randy. Pat Patterson, with all the wonderful things he could have said about Randy, had nothing but bad things to say on the DVD. And you know what? I know when I knocked Pat Patterson, let me say this first. He's a great worker. He's a great wrestler. I saw him in his prime in 1967. I was 12 years old. He was teamed up with Ray Stevens in San Francisco at the Cow Palace, and he wrestled against Pedro Morales and Pepper Gomez. And I thought to myself, self, these guys are giving the fans more entertainment than has ever been paid for in my life. And they say, who's better, Stevens or Patterson? I don't know. I just saw two blonde people doing this, you know, and I couldn't tell them apart, you know. But I mean, so when I criticize people, I don't take everything away from them, okay? I'm not knocking Pat for his work or his ability or his performance or his mind. He's got all that. But when Randy, you know, had that great match with Ricky Steamboat, it bothered him because he could never top it. No matter who he wrestled, he could never, in his mind, top the athleticism of that match. And it bothered him because he was not a guy to rest on his laurels. So they put him on the announcing table many years later, and he's watching a guy emerge as the greatest worker in the company. That's Shawn Michaels. Sure. And he was a young man just breaking out of his tag team shell and getting into the singles thing. And he had an idea to have a 2-year program with Shawn Michaels involving all this like Hatfield and McCoy's feuding. And trust me, Randy had it all planned. And culminating in WrestleMania, where Shawn Michaels would lose his hair, you know, shave his head if he lost, and Randy would give up his career and retire to the announcer's table if he lost. And there he would have the greatest match of his career, better than the one with Ricky Steamboat. And Pat Patterson said, well, Lanny, that's a, Randy, that's a great idea, but the problem is we're having a youth movement and the best thing you can do is hang on the microphone. And he says, I don't want to be an announcer. I want to be in the ring. And he put a chip on his shoulder. And every time he worked in the WCW, he wanted to show them he was still young. You know.
And of course, Randy did have a lot left. And he showed that starting in 1995 in WCW. And you followed him there. You left the WWF. Before we get to the WCW question, what was it like to say goodbye to WWF? How did that look? Like, did you have a final goodbye, or did you just let your contract run out, or how did that work that you had your last match where you had so many big moments?
Well, the first thing I did was after WrestleMania 6, then I started jobbing for Brutus Beefcake. Then I started jobbing for Coco Beware. And when I was done jobbing for Coco Beware, they gave me my good luck on your future endeavors. So it wasn't my idea. So then 6 months later, they bring me to the Beverly Brothers because John Tolis quit or was fired. I don't know. And I became the manager of the Beverly Brothers. Right. Now, the Beverly Brothers, they're nice people, and I wish them well. But they had a finish hold called the Shaker Heights Spike, and they used to hurt people. You know, the enhancement talent, which is actual human beings that are, you know, that are hoping not to break their neck. They would get them on a back body drop. The other guy would jump up and throw their head right down in pile driver fashion. Do you understand me? And that was their finish. Now, here's my question, guys. If you do that to the job guys, how come you didn't do it to John Tenta? Why didn't you do it to Tugboat or the Typhoon or, you know, all those people? Why didn't you do it to the Road Warriors? Why didn't you do it to the Powers of Pain? Why didn't you do it to the Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson? You know why you didn't do it? Because you're an immoral group of misanthropes where you think you can do that to a guy that's just trying to make a living and trying to break into the business. You know what I mean? And what if I break your neck and I say I'm sorry? What good is that? Okay, that's my point. And I like those guys and everything. They say, how'd you like managing the Beverly Brothers? I said, well, it was better than having to wrestle them on television. You know.
Was it a common thing then for, you know, just everyone to kind of take advantage of the job guys like that?
Well, I'll tell you what, my brother never did it. Mr. Perfect never did it. Kurt Hennig. Terry Funk never did it. All the best Harley Race never did it. Only the arrogant fools do that. I'm glad I never got to take the Shaker Heights Spike. And guess what? If you throw me in the ropes, I'll hang onto the ropes. And if I lose my job, I'll lose my job. You know, I'm not taking that move.
Did you ever actually see someone get hurt from?
Oh yeah.
From that move. I mean, just from, you know, a guy taking advantage of a job guy like that.
Sure, they did. Of course, you know, you take advantage of people, and tell you what, that's what happened to Bruiser Brody. You know, he beat up a guy and the guy stabbed him. You know, you take advantage too many times, eventually somebody, and you know, the knife makes you just as tall. It's an equalizer. You see what I mean? You may be a little guy, but you get a knife like that. Now we're tie game. Yeah.
For sure. Well, you know, that didn't last too long, you know, with the Beverly Brothers, and you were out of WWF. You said you were given your future endeavors, and you followed Randy to WCW. Of course, you've told the story that Randy got a hold of you and said there's a contract for you, and Randy actually purchased the Gorgeous George gimmick and saying that's going to be for you. God, it'd be perfect, right? And you kind of worked your way into shape and worked your way into this character that you were going to play. It never happened. How disappointed were you that even though you were getting contracts for a few years, that you never actually made an appearance for WCW in that gimmick or another?
Well, what did I say about 45 minutes ago? That I didn't want to go on welfare, right? Okay? But that was the closest I've ever been to being on welfare. And I didn't spend a dime of it. I saved, I invested, and, you know, all's well that ends well. The only thing that counts is what the bank teller counts. They don't ask you any questions. I bleached my hair so much that this is my real hair color, by the way. You know, I've got silver in the dark, okay? But I bleached my hair so much, even professionally, that it turned red and then broke off, okay?
Oh, my God.
So instead of Gorgeous George, I looked like the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz. So I'm happy to say now I don't have a perm, and this is the real deal, okay? I just got a haircut, which I always found it's going to take 2 weeks for it not to look like a haircut, and then you look good for 2 weeks, and then you're homeless again.
Yeah, that's
you know what I mean?
That's pretty much it.
Look like a bum on the street, you know?
So,
but
it sounds like to me that you were ready and willing. You even were dyeing your hair. You were in shape. Nobody was calling you. Your own calls were not being returned. That must have been very frustrating. What was Randy's role in kind of finding out what the hell was going on with the career of Lenny Poffo? Because you're really in purgatory because you can't work anywhere now.
Well, not that I was in great demand anyway at that time, but what I did spend money on was about, for $300, I got baby blue eye contact lenses, which took me a long time to get used to, and because my eyes are hazel, but I wanted baby blue, okay? And then I wrote a song, and I had it professionally produced, and it's, you don't want to hear it, it sucks, is it? Gorgeous George, they call me Gorgeous George, with my hair blonde and curly and my eyes of china blue. Gorgeous George, you know, all that is the sappiest song you ever heard, but I wrote it, you know. And then and I was working on the tan. I had a sunbed, and I was taking a chance on that. I was also taking steroids were illegal then, but I was taking HCG, human growth hormone.
Which was
it was legal then. I was taking the legal one, and it worked. So I was looking very buff. So, and I'm not telling you this because I'm proud of it. I'm actually ashamed of it. But if I can help people that are listening not take it, that's give me a little bit more credibility. I like to be honest. That way, I don't have to remember my lies, you know, and then get caught in a lie later on. Yeah, I took human growth hormone. And I took Dapadurabin before my match with Hulk Hogan for about 5 months. You know, and then I had a thing called testicular atrophy. Why do mice have such small balls? Because very few of them know how to dance. So anyway, so I pulled the needle out. And then I lost my libido for about a month, but I was married at the time, so it made no difference at all. Are you laughing to keep from crying, or are you just...
Yeah, pretty much. That's a good call.
Okay.
Well, I mean, so it sounds like you were Jack. You played the part. It was a character that would have worked. I don't understand why there was no interest in bringing it up to TV. I don't get it.
Because there were too many bookers. You know, there was a booking committee, and everybody had their idea and this and that. And you know what? It wouldn't have gotten over because I did not look the part. You know, my hair was falling out. It was horrible.
Just throwing something out there, you know, maybe conspiracy theory stuff. You know, Randy comes in following Hogan. Hogan has a lot of power. Hogan, if you look at Randy's career in WCW, the matches he was given, it seems like it was contractually obligated for him to get a title, but it didn't seem like they really took care of Randy's career in WCW. Do you think Hogan had a part, maybe, in keeping you where you were as to not give Randy more power in that WCW structure?
Well, first of all, number one, I don't know. And secondly, you're talking about the two people in my life, besides my father and my mother, that have done the most for me, Hulk Hogan and Randy Macho Man Savage. So when they had a little bit of a heat between them, I didn't know what to do, because where would I be without Hulk Hogan in 1989? Not even interesting enough for you to talk to for 1 hour. See what I mean? I mean, really, you take a, I was Ponscom, and he made me for 4 months. And you know, what's he done for me lately? Nothing, but he doesn't have to. I'm appreciative of those 4 months. And you know what? And I made 23 appearances in Madison Square Garden, but twice I was on the main event. Now, that's not as many times as Bruno Sammartino, but I think it's pretty good.
Yep.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Two times in the main event, pretty good. So, in other words, when I look back at my life, you know, most wrestlers are into pleasure, power, and possession. And they develop egos the size of cathedrals, and they never get satisfied. Me, I'm into health, wealth, and freedom. Health is first. I'm eating greens, onions, mushrooms, beans, berries, and seeds. And I'm fasting, and I'm, I might be wrong. Because after all, Nikolai Volkoff was into health foods, and he died. And Iron Sheik, he's been trying to commit suicide for 40 years, and he's still alive. So don't tell me it's fair, okay? So in other words, I could croak right after we hang up here. You know, but I mean, at least I'm trying. And you're going to say, what kind of a guy was Lanny? He says, well, at least he tried to live the good life. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, my point is, I can't say anything bad about Hulk Hogan because look what he did for me. And I can't say anything bad about my brother because look what he did for me. And would I have gotten as far as I got without my brother being the Macho Man? Actually, Randy will tell you if he were here today that he wouldn't have got as far as he got if his father wasn't Angelo Poffo. Because somebody's got to open the door, and then you have to have the temerity to go through the door. And then it's a vicious world. One guy knocks you and nobody likes you, and that's it. You know, it's just a thing where it's not the 100-yard dash where the best man wins. It's a matter of opinion. It is not objective, it's subjective. So who's your favorite wrestler? And who's your favorite wrestler? There's two different guys. You see what I mean? And who's the prettier girl? The blonde, the brunette, or the redhead? Well, it's whatever you like. You see what I mean? You just don't know. You know, everybody's, you just don't know. It's just, they're all pretty. They're all good workers. You know, I don't want to be like Bret Hart knocking Ric Flair and Ric Flair knocking Bret Hart. You know, we're all at the age where we should just say, hey, we were all great in our own way. You know, and we were all contributed to the people that bought a ticket would get something for their money.
Absolutely. And Lanny, we cannot thank you enough for joining us this week. Of course, you are doing a bunch of stuff, but one thing I know you're doing these days is doing the Genius Cast, which is your podcast. I'm sure it's an entertaining show with a because you have a lot to say. Tell us a little bit about how we can get a listen to your show, The Genius Cast.
Well, let me just make one shameless plug. Have you ever heard of Pro Wrestling Tees?
Yes.
Okay. Have a look at this. They made fun of me. They made fun of me like that the poem I used to have, that Genius Glow is in Soul Glow, like a takeoff on Coming to America.
Soul Glow.
You know, that guy Daryl. That Daryl,
yeah,
you know, that goofy guy with the bad hair, you know, so they made fun of my hair. So I said, okay, very funny. Ryan from Pro Wrestling Tees. So believe it or not, there's a T-shirt of me and Jay Lethal, brothers from another mother. Right. And then there's the Pro Wrestling Tees, which I'm wearing now because I couldn't wear both of them. Okay. So go on Pro Wrestling Tees and there, a shameless plug of you can buy my T-shirt. And then now what happened was, a thousand people have asked me to do a podcast. And then I said, no, I don't want to do that because you know why? It seems like a lot of work. I don't want to be working hard. You see what I mean? It's a lot of work. So I met this guy, J.P. Zarka from England, who I met him in New York because of the movie 350 Days, a friend of Evan Ginsberg. And he says, do you want to do a podcast? And I said, no. Why not? Because it's too much work. He says, I'll do all the work. I said, you'll do all the work? And then he already had a very successful ProWrestlingStories.com. So I said, you know what? If you do all the work, I'll do it.
That sounds familiar, Lanny. I got to tell you, that sounds really familiar.
Well, anyway, somebody's got to do it, right? So anyway, he does all the work, and he is great, and he is smart, and he is nice, and I'll tell you what, we are friends now. You know what I mean? It's like we started out as friends, but some people break up after 11 weeks. You know, like you said you were going to do blah, blah, blah. So now...
Me and Matt are headed in that direction.
Oh, you're going to get a divorce? I noticed they're sleeping. Okay. So anyway, JP Zarka, finally, we're getting some huge momentum. And the sponsors are knocking on our door and everything. So the time to quit was 11 weeks ago, not now. Now that we got momentum, you know. And so let's see. So the Genius Cast, go on. Listen, I don't. You have to ask him how to get a hold of it.
Well, I assume you can search the Genius Cast on all your podcast platforms and subscribe on iTunes. And of course, follow you on Twitter. And of course, ProWrestlingStories.com is another place to go to find out about the Genius Cast as well.
I'm sure. Thank you. Thank you. Because I sure don't know how to plug my own show. So all I do. And I'll tell you what, we've got some big ideas coming up. This guy, JP Zarka, he is so creative. And I finally told him, I said, stop asking permission. You have carte blanche to do anything you want, because he hasn't been wrong yet. You see what I mean? And I don't like to take a creative guy and handcuff him. You know, he's just like, just go for it, man. You know what I mean? I said, I don't want to hear it. Surprise me. You know, and he's never let me down. I'm telling you, this guy, and we have a bit of a handicap. He's 5 hours. You know, it's like we go to, you know, he's in London, England. So that's a handicap because we have to get together for a show. And he's married with a daughter who is 2 years old, you know. So
your time's all messed up. Yeah.
Yeah, I know all about that. You know, I just came back from Japan. My time is all messed up. And, 13 hours from Dallas to Tokyo. Oh my God. You know, especially when you're in 23A, you know, you're sucking hind tit on the sow, as they say. But anyway, New Japan, thank you for letting me go in there. What a great bunch of guys. If you invite me back, I'd be proud to go back. But in the meantime, what a bucket list thing, because I've never been to Japan. And I got to visit all the tourist things and everybody. Everybody just, you know, they're such nice people there. You know, one time I was in Osaka and I took a walk and I was actually approached by, you know, prostitution. And they spoke a little broken English. The girl says, $50? And I said, no, I never charge.
And with that, Robbie, I think we have a great interview. What do you think?
Yeah, hey, Lanny, thank you very much, man. We really appreciate it.
No, I want to thank you guys. You know, you guys never interrupted me. I fucking hate being interrupted. You know, so thank you for that. And I appreciate it. And I think you guys are polite and professional, and that's all I ask.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. And you have a great night, okay?
Okay, thank you so much. And do me a favor. Send me the link so I can look at
for
this.
Sure.
And, you know... by the way, if you look behind me, that's my father's Believe It or Not cartoon, Ripley's Believe It or Not. He did 6,033 consecutive sit-ups. And nice. If there's other memorabilia here. This is my office, and this is where I keep my pictures. And, it's been rough. You know, I've lost my whole family, but I still got my daughter and my grandson. And I have them call me abuelo because I was part Italian, which is Nono and Nona, and I was part Jewish. I was Zadie and Bubby. He said, well, what do you want them to call you? I said, how about abuelo? He said, but you're not Spanish.
Yes.
And I said, yeah, but it sounds cool, doesn't it?
It does. That's awesome.
Hey, Robbie. Robbie always teases me that I laugh coming out of the interviews because I want to sound... jovial. I've been accused of sounding monotone before, so I want to sound jovial. So let me try that again. Are you ready, Robbie?
All right, let's try it again.
So that was a wonderful interview with.
Oh, let's do it with me giving you the countdown. Ready?
Okay.
In 3, 2.
Whoa, Lanny Papa, what do you think for Robert Strauss of that great interview?
Dude, he's funnier than I thought. He really is. I was laughing, and I wasn't even doing the Robbie E. fake laugh. I was actually really laughing a few times. He's a cool guy.
It's really interesting. It's like he's different, you know? So it's like, it's a little bit like if, you know, one of, like, say Marty Jannetty was, like, you know, sober and had like 30 more IQ points.
Yeah, but this is true. Yeah. I guess, I mean, I don't know if Marty Jannetty would be the guy that would come to mind when I'm thinking of him to compare him to, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was a great interview. I think it was kind of all over the place. We talked about a bunch of stuff. I think what was interesting to me was those WCW years where he just basically sat on a paycheck, and people make a lot of that, but it didn't sound like it was a great experience for him.
Yeah, well, he said that was the time in his career that he was close to being on welfare. Is that what he said?
Yeah. And we didn't, dude, his dad was a wrestler. What the fuck, dude?
I know his dad was. When we start interviews, sometimes I'm trying to jump the gun and get that first question in. And I actually did know that his dad was a wrestler.
I'm surprised you weren't like, so you have any siblings, Lanny? You got any brothers or sisters?
My wife's downstairs and we got The Bachelor waiting. We're going to be watching it. So my mind was on that. Okay.
But I thought it was a great interview. I think he was really a good guest, and he has a lot of cool stuff to say. Very interesting guy. And of course, he's off that New Japan gig. You know, definitely
check. I hope it works out for him.
What's that?
I hope it works out for him.
Absolutely. You know, there's no reason why it shouldn't. And of course, speaking of things that you should definitely do, you should definitely check out the Why It Ended Patreon, patreon.com/whyitended. Of course, our YouTube is whereitended.com. Follow Robert Strauss on Instagram, on Twitter, is it at the Robert Strauss brand?
It's just at Robert Strauss on Twitter and Instagram. And then, of course, Twitter and Instagram at Why It Ended.
And branding, man. You've got it down. You are a brand.
I love looking at my muscles now that we do this video thing.
This is something to go and just kill myself. So,
guys, thanks for tuning in. Pro Wrestling Tees, get the Why It Ended shirts. We appreciate the Patreon members. We got our bonus episode coming up. And, Jimmy Seafood. We will be tweeting, you know, pictures and stuff from the live show this Sunday. So until next week, Matt.
We will see you next week. And make sure to join us at Jimmy's Famous Seafood this Sunday, Survivor Series Sunday. We will see you next week on Why.
I'm closing my laptop.
That's it. It's over. Why It Ended.
Why It Ended.